Welcome to the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am Nate Schreiber, and as always, with my co-host, Alex Pollinger.
All right, I've got something for Sean McDermott. Dude, can you say something useful for once to the media? And be decisive. He's so indecisive with anything that's not Nathan Peterman related. I think Sean McDermott's the type of guy, you ask him if he wants to go out to dinner, and he's like, I don't know. And spends 2 hours looking at Yelp reviews, and just, he has this irrational love for something like fish tacos. And instead of choosing the highest rated restaurant, he just goes with the thing he loves the most, fish tacos. He ends up getting food poisoning from it. And then afterwards, you ask him about it, and he's like, well, there were some good things and there were some bad things about it. That's about my analogy of Sean McDermott with Nathan Peterman. Just an irrational love for him. That's the only thing he's decisive about. And everything else just drives me insane.
I just love the line in the post-game presser where he's like, he asked a question, something about the quarterback play. I don't remember the exact question off the top of my head. But he goes, you know, I thought there were some times we were on target and some times we weren't. Like, genius. If anyone that watched that game could tell that there were pretty much zero times you were on target, especially Nathan Peterman, how many times did he throw the ball to the Bills? Like, less times than he threw it other places? Like, it just, I don't understand why McDermott can't just come out there and just get angry, or at least say something.
Yes, exactly. Say something of substance. It's just a word salad filled with absolutely nothing. It's just like if it's just a salad of lettuce and nothing else. But he did say something semi-useful today. Actually, I think the most useful thing he's ever said is he didn't need to elaborate on the decision to start Josh Allen. It's the most useful thing he's ever said.
And that's him kind of like, he needs to kind of build a sort of personality with the media and for the fan base, because so far in his tenure as a Bills coach, he is basically Chuck Pagano 2.0. And it's very frustrating. I mean, when they're winning, and they were winning last year, and when they're winning, you can kind of deal with it a little bit. That's how it's kind of how like Patriots fans can deal with Belichick saying nothing ever, because they win, right? But unless you're Belichick, it's very hard to be able to pull that off for any extended period of time. So I'm hoping that today was a start of him kind of turning around the way he acts and speaks to the media.
Yeah, because it's honestly ridiculous, Nate. Like, this happens a lot with NFL coaches, and like you said, people tolerate it when they win. But it's so dry and boring, and just cliche after cliche. Trust the process. Oh, there are some good things and some bad things. We'll look at the film. Okay, dude, can you say something that's remotely useful for anyone other than, like, the old guys that do the CBS pregame show?
I mean, and that's kind of what McDermott, I think, has been going for with the media. I honestly think he saw or someone talked to him about the way that the reaction to him online from the press conference, the post-game press conference, because he seemed like he had a different attitude today. Both this morning and this afternoon when he spoke to the media. And I think that is something that, especially in the long term, will be good for both Sean McDermott and the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, and he actually gave a little bit of analysis on Josh Allen today during that press conference. He said he thought he had good command of the offense. After the snap, he executed well. In other times, we need to execute better. That was going back to his cliche word salad. But then he said he moved well and put himself in position, you know, to excel. And it's not great. It's great grading on a curve for Sean McDermott. So I do hope he kind of opens up and has a bit of a personality. I just hate how everything's so dry and just cliche. Come on, man. Like, he's going to be featured so much on the Dan Le Batard show, useless sound montage every weekend.
Oh yeah, that and we tweeted that after that during that press conference on Sunday night, because just the things he was saying, the quote that I had set right at the top of the pod where, oh, we were on target sometimes we weren't, like, that is the typical response. That's like a Chuck Pagano response. That's why McDermott is Chuck Pagano 2.0. He pretty much just uses a lot of words to say It's going well and it's not going well at the same time, but that's how it's going to be. And that's how McDermott, he just uses a lot of words to say that.
If you did not listen to the Dan Le Batard show, I highly recommend it. And Mondays are just tremendous when they put together a montage of NFL coaches and players saying absolutely nothing and just a bunch of cliches. It's incredible. And we won't want to run this into the ground, but we highly recommend that. So, Nate, we both watched the All-22 film, which is available through NFL Game Pass. If you don't have that, I highly recommend that as well. What is the biggest takeaway from you watching this All-22 film where you can see every player on the field?
I guess the biggest takeaway, for me at least, is that the better quarterback for this team is so obvious that I'm very confused as to how. I mean, I understand how Peterman won I understand how Peterman won the quarterback competition coming out of training camp. I mean, he had a better preseason, but the better quarterback is so obvious to see. The talent gap between them is so clear that I just don't quite understand a lot of the decision. I'm very happy that Allen's starting on Sunday now, but I don't understand a lot of the decision making process that went into that whole Peterman starting in the first place.
Yeah, I'll preface this by saying I truly feel empathy for Nathan Peterman being put in that situation and being like a source of national embarrassment. Like, that's not fun. It can't be fun. And I feel bad for him for that. But he, watching the All-22 film, he was even worse than he looked on the broadcast, man. He was so bad.
Yeah, and yes, the offensive line did not help one bit. But the difference in play just from when Josh Allen was in there versus Peterman, I mean, there's only so much you can blame on the offensive line.
Yeah, I actually watched the offensive line a lot in the All-22. They weren't terrible. For the most part, I think they gave up, 6 sacks in the game. I would put about 2.5 directly on the offensive line. The other 3.5 were on Peterman and Allen running away from a clean pocket to get sacked. I mean, I think Deion Dawkins and Jordan Mills played very well for the most part in this game. And, you know, we kind of rip on Jordan Mills a lot, but I thought he played decently well. It was more of the interior line. Vlad Dacoste, John Miller, and Ryan Groy was just terrible when they asked him to match up one-on-one with anyone.
Yeah, so I thought Groy and John Miller were absolutely brutal, especially Groy. Groy would have been – they would have been better off not having a center. he literally was always laying on his back. I mean, the dude's like 6'7". He's always laying on his back. And then Peterman almost threw an interception because Groy actually missed. And this is something you don't see very often in the NFL. He tried to block someone and just missed. Jordan Mills did that a couple times last year, but the only two players I've seen in recent years completely whiff on blocks in the NFL both start for the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, that's not ideal.
So that's something. Yeah, but I do want to say though that I didn't think Dacoste played terrible. He took 2 bad penalties. You never take penalties, obviously. That counts against him. But when he was one-on-one against the Ravens linemen, he won most of those battles. And out of the interior linemen, he played the best. I do think the tackles played better than the interior for sure, like you said. But if you're to replace 60% of an offensive line is not something you want to do in the regular season, let alone 40%. But you really need to do something about Groy and Miller, because you can't have another game like that with your top 10 quarterback, rookie quarterback starting. You can't do that again with him, or he's going to get either A, killed, or B, not be able to learn anything, because he's going to be running for his life the whole game.
Yeah, we did see last year where the Bills stuck with the starting offensive line group they had for 4 weeks before they benched John Miller for Vlad Dacoste. I'm guessing we're going to see more of the same before maybe Wyatt Teller or Ike Boker got picked up on waivers again. You know, he got snagged off their practice squad by Kansas City, but Kansas City released him, so the Bills claimed him off waivers, and he's back on the 53-man roster. That was a guy that was supposed to be drafted, but suffered, I can't remember, maybe a torn Achilles his senior year, and, you know, he went undrafted. But regardless, there's options behind them on the roster that can't be that much worse if they continue to play this poorly.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be someone off the street that can't be much worse. I mean, this isn't even a replacement level type football from the linemen. I mean, you talk about just going out and finding a replacement level player, a league, not even league average, or someone who's the off the street. That's what you're going to get, someone off the street much better than what you've gotten from the Bills offensive line throughout the preseason and in week one. And obviously, the regime has a plan in place, and the plan did not involve fixing the offensive line quite yet, but it needs to be looked at sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and we can't forget, this is the offense they chose. They chose to beef up the defense. Granted, they were left a little thin by Incognito and Wood with those two interesting sagas there, but for the large part, this is the offense they chose, and they're going to have to defend that.
Yeah, and it's almost like they're taking a similar rebuilding path as the Rams kind of did, where they went defense first, then they got their quarterback, then they fixed the offense. And if that's the case and that's what they're trying to do, then you can't really expect much from this offense till maybe next season. But you have to expect at least a little bit more than nothing.
Yeah, so let's move on to, obviously, Peterman was terrible. The tackles played okay. Dukas was okay at times, and Groy and Miller were pretty much terrible for the most part. The wide receivers, just the lack of effort once it got to be more than like a 14-0 game really bothered me on this tape. I mean, as soon as they were done running the route, they did nothing to try to help the quarterback and come back to the ball. It was just disgusting to watch, and especially Calvin Benjamin. He's got to play harder than that.
That's what I was going to. I was going to call out Benjamin specifically. He, especially as the game got more and more out of hand, he would barely even run his primary route. Right, he wouldn't even try to come back, scramble. The quarterback was scrambling, try and come back, get open, find the ball. He just basically would just half-ass his primary route, stop, and wait for the play to be over. And it's very confusing. And I'm sure, Alex, you know why it's confusing. I imagine most of our listeners do, too. The dude's in a contract year. What are you doing?
Yeah, seriously. I mean, we see how much receivers are getting paid, the good receivers, and even mediocre receivers. Tyler Lockett just got, $11 or $12 million a year. Dude, show some effort. Like, he showed more effort in that preseason week one, in that one drive he played, than he did it any time during a regular season game. Even when the score was 0-0, it just, for the most part, a lot of it, like Charles Clay, I didn't even notice he was out there on the film. He did absolutely nothing. But Benjamin stuck out, not only because he did nothing, but because just the complete lack of effort. And that's disgusting to me.
Yeah, it really was unfortunate. But there weren't all bad things. There were not all bad things on Sunday. And that is something I think that is difficult to kind of wrap your head around when the score was 47-3. But there were not all bad things. So the linebackers were very good on Sunday. The linebackers were very good. I mean, the linebackers and the secondary, for the most part, were all pretty good. Tre'Davious White, like always, Joe Flacco can't even throw the ball near him. But that's what you're going to – all year it's what's going to happen. You can't really throw the ball near Tre'Davious White. And I thought Edmonds and Milano played fantastic games as well.
Yeah, there were a couple times where Edmonds and Milano bit really hard on the play action. And I think teams are going to take advantage of that because they're so athletic and so quick. They're going to use that against them and use that aggressiveness against them in those situations. One thing I didn't like, the defensive play calling in this game, Nate. It was really slippery conditions, a ton of rain, and the Bills just kept dropping into a lot of shell coverages. Play man-to-man on these wide receivers for the Ravens that aren't that good. I mean, John Brown you have to give a little bit of space to, but, I mean, you have two great safeties to help over the top. Why the heck were they just playing zone coverage 9 or 10 yards off the line of scrimmage and letting Flacco nickel and dime them for 8 yards every pass in the first half?
So one thing I will say is McDermott is more of his own guy than a man guy, and you saw that in Carolina. The Panthers played a lot of zone defense, and that's what they were kind of known for. But they didn't play this kind. They played a more aggressive zone defense than the Bills played yesterday, or on Sunday. I mean, on Sunday they you're right. They were sitting in a shell, and they're almost giving up chunks of the field to Flacco. And that part confuses me. I understand playing zone. It's what some of your players are really good at, and you have guys that fit in that kind of a defense. But playing that shell coverage, I don't understand that part at all. I mean, if you're gonna play zone, play an aggressive Tampa 2 or blitz out of it and do unique things rather than sit back in these two deep looks where you basically are saying, okay, here, we'll give you the first 10 yards of the field. Go ahead, get a first down every play.
Yeah, it was basically just a soft cover two a lot. That's what it looked like to me, Nate. Is that what you saw in the film?
Yeah, so they basically sat in a cover two or a cover three the majority of the game, and it was not. And then the huge difference on their side of the ball, the Ravens basically played one high safety the whole game and dared the Bills to throw it on field, and they clearly couldn't.
Yeah, so the one thing with the zone coverage, it works if your front four get pressured, and that defensive line was awful, man. Like, Shaq Lawson played very well. I was impressed with Shaq Lawson. Fortunately, he left with a hamstring injury. They might be without him this week. But I don't know if it was lack of effort or lack of intensity. It just seemed like, compared to the Ravens' D-line, the Bills seemed so slow off the snap on the defensive side of the ball, at least the line. Kyle Williams is the only one that seemed to react quickly to the snap. I thought Star Latulule played well. I said that in our rapid reaction. He didn't look that great in the All-22 film. He made a couple plays where he split the double team and allowed the linebackers to make a play for a tackle for a loss, but I mean, he didn't impress me at all, especially in pass rushing.
Yeah, so Latulule, watching the All-22, he got a ton of one-on-one opportunities and didn't really do anything with them. And I think that's something the Bills probably expected him to be able to do when they paid him all that money is if he gets the one-on-one, to win the one-on-one. If he gets double-teamed, great. That's his job. Get double-teamed, eat up blocks. But if he gets one-on-one, he needs to win those one-on-ones. But my biggest frustration was the lack of effort. I thought Trent Murphy and Adolphus Washington, granted Trent Murphy's coming back from injury, but I thought they both weren't really even trying that hard on Sunday. And I think that's a big chunk of why Adolphus Washington is not a Buffalo Bill anymore. He was the worst offender of not trying. And then on the opposite end of that spectrum, the only player on the entire team, from my estimation, that played hard from snap one to snap 80 or however many snaps there were was Harrison Phillips. He showed effort on all the way to the last play of the game. And there really wasn't anyone else, I think, or I thought, that did that. And I think that's part of why the Bills are okay trading Washington for a defensive end instead of another tackle.
Yeah, and you're right about Harrison Phillips. He did play with a lot of intensity. He played okay. I don't think he was anything special out there. Man, Jerry Hughes was non-existent. Like, got no pressure at all. It seemed like he wasn't even on the field. They can save, I think it ends up being like $8 million on next year's cap if they cut him after the season. I think it's absolutely going to happen. And he's like 30 years old now, maybe 31. He's just useless out there. And that bothers me because Hughes has so much potential to be a good player. And he goes through patches like this for 9 or 10 games where he'll do nothing. And then all of a sudden they'll have like a 2 or 3 sack game. But I don't know. They need to fix the defensive line because that's the key for that McDermott zone defense to succeed, is to get pressure on the quarterback with the front four.
Yeah, I mean, they spent all this money and effort to rebuild the defensive line in the offseason. So I think I will give them at least a quarter of the season or a little bit more to really see if the line has any significant improvement from last year. But with the secondary and the linebacking group you have behind that line just, they don't have to do a ton. They just have to do enough. And right now they're not doing anything. And I think that is going to make a huge difference for the Bills in terms of whether or not they can win football games. Because when the line played well last year and they got pressure on the quarterback, I'm thinking the Falcons game, I'm thinking the second half of the Buccaneers game, the teams made mistakes and the Bills won football games. And that's if they're going to win games this year, that's how it's going to happen.
Yeah, and going back to Trent Murphy, I didn't get the signing at the time, giving a guy that hadn't played in over a year that much money. And I think he was more of like a 3-4 outside linebacker pass rusher type, right, Nate?
Yeah, correct. He really, his position, I think, was listed at linebacker rather than defensive end. But I'm not 100% sure on that. But still, to pay a guy that much money and have him come in to a system he may not fit in and then only put in 25 snaps, I don't know.
Yeah, and it just, he doesn't look comfortable coming from a down position as a defensive end. He looks like he would be more comfortable as an upright pass rusher, kind of like how we saw Khalil Mack play on Sunday night for the Bears in a 3-4 type defense. I don't think he's really a 4-3 defensive end. I think the same, I know Shaq Lawson played 4-3 defensive end at Clemson. He's not a great pass rusher in that scheme. He's a great edge defender, though, against the rush and when quarterbacks go on rollouts. I think Shaq Lawson could potentially play that strong side outside linebacker spot because he's lost weight and he's a little bit quicker now. I don't know. Am I getting a little bit too generous with Shaq Lawson, or is that something we could see him do when Alexander's done?
I think you're getting a little bit too generous, but at the same time, Alexander's not the greatest athlete for a strong side linebacker position, and you don't really need to have a guy there that can play three downs, because the way most teams play in the NFL now is their middle linebacker and weak side guy will be the three down guys, and then your strong side linebackers, you're playing nickel on third down most of the time anyway, so you're not going to have that third linebacker. So you could use that as a way to get a guy in the field that you may otherwise not get on the field, but I don't know if Shaq Lawson really fits, because if he is asked to be in pass coverage any real amount of the time, so if you get a team that can try to exploit that, I think that could be something that a team could exploit against the Bills, and that is the fact that you have a guy there that is not used to being in pass coverage and having to do it over and over and over again.
Yeah, that's true. And Alexander played well. He looked good on the tape. You know, looks quick compared to last year. I don't know. Maybe he was a bit banged up by the end of the season. He is an older player. But he looked pretty good on Sunday, and I was impressed with him. Edmonds is just an absolute stud, man. I mean, once he gets the mental aspect of the game down, probably by midseason, he's just going to be unstoppable. I mean, he had a forced fumble, a sack, like 7 tackles. He dropped an interception.
Yeah, he is. He looks so much faster than everyone else out on the field, and it's almost like he could run at 3/4 speed and still be to where he needs to be every single time. He was very impressive. And like you said, he still doesn't read the game as well as you'd like, but you expect that from a rookie. He bit on some play actions. He got stuck on a couple of plays, moving in the wrong direction. But when he does make a read and when he goes to a spot, he gets there so quickly. And it's very, very impressive. There's not really any other linebackers in the NFL that have his skill set. And once he figures out the mental aspect, he's going to be a stud.
And he's bigger than everyone out there on the field, which just still boggles my mind that he's just as fast as, you know, some slower wide receivers, and he's 6'5", 250.
Yeah, there aren't any athletes like him in this league on the defensive side of the ball. There aren't many athletes like him at all. The guys that can move like that are playing tight end, like a Travis Kelce or something like that. There's guys don't move like that and have that physicality at the same time. It just doesn't happen in this league.
Yeah, so I guess one more thing I want to talk about on the defense from the All-22. Phillip Gaines looked just as bad on the All-22 as he did in the broadcast view of the game. Nate, the one play where Flacco was kind of scrambling around, looking for someone to throw to on 2nd and 30, and Gaines just completely blew the coverage. It looked like, I think it was supposed to be a cover 4, is that right?
Yeah, you're talking about the one on the flag route that the long pass in the flag route, and that, or the touch. Are you talking about touchdown pass?
No, not the, yeah, the flag route there where the ball was in the air.
I think that was cover four. I'm not exactly sure what he was supposed to be doing. I think it was a cover four, but he just got lost on that play. But I see, in watching this, and I'll like to hear your opinion on this as well. I didn't think he played, so he gave up a touchdown, he gave up that long throw on the flag route, but I didn't think he played terrible other than that.
He's a very good tackler, and he plays with a lot of intensity, and I think how hard he plays that way makes up for the deficiencies he has in pass coverage. But overall, it wasn't as terrible as those two particular plays were that you mentioned, but yeah, he's a complete liability in pass coverage.
Yeah, so I think if you get him in a position where he can keep a receiver in front of him and not have to really do a ton, he can be decent in pass coverage. But if you start asking him to do a lot, it's going to be, I mean, he's not as bad as Sharice Wright.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so yeah, he's not as bad as Sharice Wright. If to be as bad as Sharice Wright takes a lot of, you don't have to try to be that bad. So I guess at least he's not that far. But, yes, we'd like to see more out of him. And the fact that they played him instead of Vontae Davis says a lot about Vontae Davis, in my opinion.
Yeah, I wonder with the injury to Tyron Johnson if Vontae Davis will be active this week, playing that outside cornerback spot and moving Philip Gaines into the slot, where I think he's better. That's what he's more suited to. He was terrible outside Kansas City in man or zone coverage. And we saw those tendencies again on Sunday. On the touchdown pass to Crabtree, he actually played it with perfect. He used his leverage to push the receiver to the outside in man coverage, and he never turns his head around to intercept the pass. Like the broadcaster, yep. The broadcast said, "Oh, that was such a good throw by Flacco." It's actually a terrible throw. Crabtree's a huge receiver. Throw the ball up high, let him go get it over the top of the defender. If Gaines turns around, it's an interception.
Yeah, and that play kind of encapsulates the issues the Bills had on defense. It was just dumb mistakes, just things that you wouldn't expect the Sean McDermott team to do, and that's what they did. But like we've talked about, we have to say the Bills did not play as bad as 47-3 looks.
Yeah, I mean, the Ravens had a lot of short fields because of turnovers and, mistakes on special teams. But the defense, outside of those first two touchdown drives, they played well. I mean, the first two touchdown drives, they made some really bad mistakes that resulted in being down 14-0 a few minutes into the game. And I don't think that's entirely on the defense. They were on the field almost the entire game. But considering that, I thought they played decently well. I mean, they have a good core of young players. It's just there's some liabilities out there with Philip Gaines and the defensive line. Just they have to get pressure.
Yeah, so this weekend will be interesting to see the home opener against a very, very good offense. See if they can hold them to less than 25 points. Is that even realistic? I mean, the Chargers are favored by 7.5, and the over-under is 43. I mean, if they hold them to 25, I'll be pretty impressed.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough matchup. Cross-country road trips are usually tougher, but I mean, the Chargers are favored for a reason. Is there anything else from the All-22 review, Nate, that you want to mention before we move into kind of a league-wide NFL Week 1 wrap-up?
I don't think so. I think we kind of covered what we wanted to cover with the All-22, and I think the biggest takeaways for me from getting to watch the film after the game, give myself a couple days to think about it. I would say three things to take away from that game. Number one, the Bills were not nearly as bad as 47-3, and I think we have to, as fans and as observers, we have to understand that they were not that bad. Things are going to get better. I think number two, the defensive line has to play much, much better. And number three, I think overall effort is the effort on that game was not a Sean McDermott team kind of effort, and that has to change.
Yeah, it kind of felt like that three-game stretch where they just got their asses beat last year. at three games in a row by like 30 or 40 points each game. And then all of a sudden they turned it around randomly and won a chunk of games after that. That's why I'm not, it's 1 week. We can't read too much into it. I'm not going to write them off this early. You know, if they continue to play like that, they're going to be picking Nick Bosa first overall, which I'm okay with, but you know, it's premature to say they're the worst team in the NFL. I mean, from a talent perspective, they're definitely there, but I don't know. We'll see going forward. And one thing I do want to add from the All-22 review, Marcus Murphy is a stud, man, just on offense, is a special teams kick returner and punt returner. He's the real deal. And, you know, if things go this roughly, I can see, make an argument to trade LeSean McCoy before the trade deadline if your team's going to be, you know, 3-13.
Yeah, especially, I mean, we've seen across the NFL, running backs don't mean a ton in this league. I mean, look at the Steelers, Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell is one of the best running backs in the NFL right now, if not the best running back in the NFL. And when he doesn't play, the Steelers are the same freaking team.
That's true.
They don't get any better. They don't get any worse. They're the same team. It doesn't matter who's playing running back. And I think you kind of can see that all throughout the league. And I think that is a potential argument to moving on from Shady. As much as Bills fans probably love Shady, and since the offense has pretty much been his offense the past 3 years since he's been here, 4 years since he's been here. But running backs don't mean as much as they used to in this league, and that is, I think, the best argument for moving on from him.
Yeah, and he's not value at what they pay him right now. It's like $9 or $10 million. And I think next year is the last year in his contract. And maybe there's another year after that. I think next year is supposed to be the last year.
Yeah, but who wants that money? That's the tough thing, is who wants that money? So, who wants to pay him that money? Kind
of. Yeah, that's true. You have to find a market for him, and there might not be one. So, we'll move into a quick NFL-wide recap for you guys. And we're running kind of long on this pod, so we're going to give you a separate one of Bills Chargers preview. So, we're going to wrap up with an NFL recap. How about Fitzmagic, man? He went out there and torched the Saints defense, who was pretty good last year.
So this is, Bills fans know Ryan Fitzpatrick very well. After he led the Bills to a 3-0 and then a 5-2 start in the same season, got paid a big money and then kind of never was good again. That's kind of what Fitzmagic is like, though. He's going to do his 417 yard, four touchdowns, upset the Saints on the road, and then he's going to go to the next game, and he's going to be like 35% completion percentage, four interceptions, useless, lose by 30. That's what Fitzmagic does.
Yes, there's like polar opposites. It's like he has an alter ego where he just comes out and plays out of his mind for one game. It happened when, I think it was Rex Ryan's first year, when Fitzpatrick was the starter for the Jets. He came into the Bills stadium on Thursday night, absolutely torched them, just dropping dimes all over the field. I'm pretty sure he threw for like 400 yards in that game. And then he threw, I think it was six interceptions the next game against Kansas City.
That is Fitzpatrick in a nutshell. Is he is great, and then he's terrible all at the same time. And I think that's what you have to expect out of him, and I'll be curious to see how the Bucs handle the situation with him when Winston comes back from his suspension.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. You don't want to put your franchise on the back of Ryan Fitzpatrick, but I'm also not sold on Jameis Winston either, so that is intriguing. Man, I love the Sunday night game. Anytime I get to watch Aaron Rodgers on national television, and that's the only game on, I'm just glued to the TV. The guy is so good, man. And then we talked about it in the NFL-wide preview to the season. Rodgers is the best quarterback I've ever seen. And just watching him do that on one leg, it solidified that in my mind.
Yeah, Rodgers is the GOAT. And we will have this. We have a discussion frequently on the pod, and we will continue to have a discussion because we believe we're kind of in a minority thinking Rodgers is the greatest of all time, but he does things that no other quarterback can do. Tom Brady well, Tom Brady is a fantastic quarterback, and he is one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. He is not capable of doing the things that Aaron Rodgers is capable of doing. And that's just point-blank period.
Yeah, and what I was trying to do during that Sunday night game, watching Rodgers pre-snap, I'm trying to look at the things that he sees and what he's, you know, signaling to the wide receivers, changing the plays, changing their routes. I don't know how he processes the game that quickly. I mean, that Bears pass rush was eating the Packers offensive line alive. And then in the second half, the ball was just coming out in like a second and a half to guys that weren't entirely open, but he was somehow making those receivers open and giving them room to run afterwards. I don't think Randall Cobb's a good receiver. I think Aaron Rodgers makes him great. And obviously Cobb made a great play.
How about that last touchdown throw?
Yeah.
The run after catch was ridiculous. Yes, it was a really nice play to find the end zone. But to climb the pocket like that, throw off balance, off your bad knee, and put the ball in a spot where only Cobb could catch it in between multiple defenders is just, that's vintage Aaron Rodgers right there.
Yeah, and I mean, Cobb's an excellent guy after the catch. There's no denying that. But in terms of like him being a great route runner and getting open, great hands, that I don't think so. He's a guy that's benefited from playing with Rodgers. I think Devontae Adams is pretty good. He's probably the best receiver Rodgers has ever had outside of Greg Jennings. I just feel bad for the guy, man. He hasn't had like outstanding talent around him ever. He's just incredible. That was such a great comeback.
So another team that I want to talk about, and I think this team was to me the most impressive team overall in week one, and that was the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah. I mean, Mahomes looked pretty good. I mean, Mahomes reminds me a lot of Brett Favre. You're going to get a lot of those games where he just looks so sharp and he makes no mistakes. But he's kind of a gunslinger, so I think we're also going to see games where he throws three or four picks along with his 300 yards.
Yeah, I mean, he only threw the ball 27 times on Sunday, and he threw for 256 yards, throwing it 27 times, and he only completed 15 of those. So he is going to be reliant on throwing the ball deep to guys like Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins, and he basically threw the ball to Tyreek Hill only on Sunday. The vast majority of his yards were to Hill. But I think having Hill and Watkins is going to make that team pretty fun to watch this year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, almost every game they play is going to be a shootout because that defense was bad the last year. And it's worse this year, I think, which is kind of impressive because they were pretty bad last year. And they're going to be in the playoff hunt with a terrible defense because they have a great offense.
Yeah, absolutely, and again the AFC. Well, we thought the AFC was going to be a struggle hard this year, and we'll have to kind of see still. But I mean, the AFC East. Look at this, three teams undefeated.
Yeah, the Bills are in the cellar. I actually didn't watch any of that Monday night game with the Jets and Lions, but from the sounds of it, the Jets defense just knew everything that Stafford was doing, which makes the game a lot easier.
Yeah, I mean, they picked them off four times. He struggled mightily. Darnold, I thought, was okay. Not great. His first pass of the game, his first pass of his career, was one of the ugliest passes you'll see a quarterback throw. If Josh Allen does that on Sunday, just the national media is going to go nuts over it, and they didn't really say anything about Darnold's interception, but it was bad. I mean, really bad.
Yeah.
But after that, he threw two touchdowns, didn't make a ton of mistakes, didn't do anything too crazy, but he didn't win that game for him. Anyone that sees the box score and says, oh, Darnold won this football game, no, he didn't win the game.
Yeah,
that defense won the game.
Another game I want to talk about was Denver-Seattle. I think Denver's got a pretty good defense. Keenan played really well at times, and he also had three terrible turnovers. So I'm interested to see how that offense looks going forward, because they were much more explosive than I anticipated with Case Keenum. He's a guy that I think is just kind of your run-of-the-mill average quarterback. But he'll show flashes of greatness, and he'll also show flashes of being terrible as well.
Yeah, he is he's going to throw for – he threw for, what, 330 yards on Sunday. He's going to do that a lot this year. But he's also going to have the part of the stat line that we don't like, which is that he had three interceptions. And you're not going to very often be able to throw three interceptions and win the football game. It just doesn't happen too often in this league. Luckily, the Seahawks also turned the ball over three times, which has helped immensely in the Broncos being able to win that game.
Yeah, I know. One of our listeners is a Broncos fan that lives in Boston, so I know he'll appreciate me apologizing for predicting that the Broncos are going to pick in the top eight. I don't see it. I think it could still happen if they end up like 6-10, 7-9, and not a whole lot of teams are bad this year. But that defense is pretty good, and if Case Keenum is serviceable, they're going to win probably 8 or 9 games. So, Joe, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so there were, honestly, for me, there weren't a ton of huge surprises in week one. I'm not surprised that the Jets and the Dolphins both won. I'm surprised the Jets won by as much as they did, but I'm not surprised they won. There weren't any major upsets to me other than the Buccaneers. Other than the Buccaneers being the Saints, pretty much everything else I expected in week one. Maybe the Steelers too.
How about we do a disservice if we didn't mention the Cleveland Browns having their best start to this to an NFL season since 2004, and they didn't win.
I just want to take a minute to talk about Tyrod Taylor's stat line. If he was still in Buffalo, and this was his stat line in week one, what would be happening right now? So here's his stat line. 15 of 40, 197 yards passing, touchdown interception, and took 7 sacks. Yes, he ran for 77 yards on a touchdown, which saved him in fantasy, but 15 for 40, 7 sacks.
Yeah, that's vintage Tyrod, where you'll see flashes of greatness, and then he'll get happy feet and not keep his eyes downfield or just adjust himself in the pocket to move away from the pressure instead of running away from it. And we saw Peterman and Allen do the same thing behind the Bills' offensive line on Sunday, and they weren't as good at evading it as Tyrod Taylor, but you can't run from clean pockets, man, or just you can't just start running crazily. It results in more sacks. Tyrod did have a beautiful 2-minute drill to tie that game, and you have to give him credit there. But then he blew it when he had Josh Gordon wide open on a go route that would have won the game.
Just underthrew.
Yeah.
And that's not something you see Tyrod Taylor do too often, is underthrow all his receivers. But fantasy-wise, for people in fantasy, definitely want Jarvis Landry. Tyrod Taylor just basically threw the ball at him every single play. So as long as Tyrod Taylor's a quarterback, Jarvis Landry's going to get like 20 targets a game. And he'll catch some of them, because if he's the only guy you're going to throw to. Tyrod had, he threw the ball 39 times, and 15 of them were to Josh Landry, and no one else got more than 4, I think, 4 or 5. He just basically was going to pump the ball to Landry all season.
Yeah, I mean, Landry will be his Charles Clay, I think. Clay was always his security blanket in Buffalo, and I think Landry pretty much serves as that short route possession type of guy like Clay was. And you know, we'll see how long Tyrod survives as the starter in Cleveland. I mean, I don't see them getting too trigger-happy putting Baker in. There were plays where Tyrod did some really good things in that game, and there's obviously a lot of plays where he played terrible as well. But I don't know. He's the best quarterback that franchise has probably had since 1999, so.
Yeah, one thing I think that's going to – I do agree with that. I think he is the best quarterback they've had in a long time. Now, he's not a great quarterback. He's a good quarterback. He's not great. He's good. He's good enough to do. He's good enough to get a team to the playoffs, and we saw that last year. He's good enough to make the playoffs. Is he good enough to do much more than that? Probably not. And one thing I think will be interesting is Drew Brees today said he heaped a ton of praise on Baker Mayfield. Said he's gonna be a lot better than Drew Brees is, which is, I mean, Drew Brees is one of the greatest of all time. So it's to hear that comment from him. Interesting, and I don't think Hugh Jackson cares. I don't really think Hugh Jackson knows what he's doing. I will be interested to see how long Tyrod lasts in Cleveland. But I am rooting for Tyrod to succeed. I always liked him in Buffalo, and I will always root for him to succeed as long as he's in the NFL.
That's true. I was always one of Tyrod's biggest defenders. I knew he had his flaws, but I think Bills fans really came down on him harder than they should have. I think he's underappreciated. But, you know, I'm definitely going to root for Tyrod. And I'm going to root for the Browns as well. I mean, how can you hate the Browns, man? They've been bad for so long. It'll be cool to see them be competitive this year. Even if they only win 5 or 6 games, if they can, you know, be in every game, that's exciting for that fan base. And it's good for the NFL, too, I think. That was an exciting game to watch at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, I think what'll be really cool in, let's say, 5 or 7 years is if the perennial AFC Conference Championship game is the Cleveland Browns and the Buffalo Bills. Now, how cool would that be? Two franchises that have just struggled for years and years and years being the perennial contenders. That would be one of the cooler things that could happen in the future of the NFL. Josh Allen versus Baker Mayfield for the next 15, 20 years.
That would be awesome. The Bills have a lot of work to do before they get there. They have a lot of cap space next year, so hopefully they can beef up that defensive line, that offensive line, and I think that'll help a lot. Nate, is there anything else you want to add for the league-wide wrap-up of Week 1 before we close out this pod?
I think I will close the pod with just saying that definitively, in the eyes of this podcast, Aaron Rodgers is the greatest quarterback to ever walk this earth.
I will die on that hill with you. And I want to close out. I know I texted you this crazy stat the other day, but for the listeners, what quarterback has the most wins in Cleveland since 1999?
If any listeners trying to guess right now, it's not a Cleveland Browns quarterback.
That's the best part. It's Ben Roethlisberger. What is he, like 11-2-1 or something crazy like that? It might be an even better line than that.
And no Browns quarterback, and there's really haven't been that many of them. So when I was trying to guess this with Alex, I could think of three guys who it might be, but I really wasn't sure about any of them. And lo and behold, it was not actually any of them. So the Browns, that just shows you the quarterback play in Cleveland the last, how long?
20 years.
20 years has been pretty bad. I mean, you got to choose your three best guys. Your three best quarterbacks in Cleveland were, it was down between Derek Anderson, Brian Hoyer, and Tim Couch. That's what you got to choose from as your top three. There's really, you don't, that's it. One of those guys is the best quarterback in Cleveland the last 20 years. At least the Bills have, could say, okay, Drew Bledsoe played in Buffalo for a couple years. He was not bad. Tyrod Taylor, not bad. I'd take him over any of those guys. So I guess at the end of the day, at least we're not Cleveland Brown fans.
For now. So that brings us to an end of episode 25 of the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I'm your co-host, Alex Pallinger.
And I am Nate Schreiber.
Subscribe, download, give us 5 stars wherever you get your podcast so others can find the podcast and give it a listen. Feel free to share it with a friend. And you'll hear from us probably in a day or so with a Bills Chargers preview. You can find us on social media, Twitter, @Bills_breakdown. We have fun on there, live tweeting the games. And we don't use Facebook quite as much, but you can follow us there @Bills_breakdown. Send any feedback to BillsBreakdownPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.